This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. A lot of people, when they look across Detroit, they see ghosts. People they've known, for sure, but also the places that we once knew, places that are part of history now. In particular, the entertainment district known as Paradise Valley. The heart of Detroit's Black life, it was a business and entertainment hub where people came to hear music and shake off their day. All through the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. This was where you went to hear artists like John Lee Hooker, Duke Ellington, Billie Holiday, Sam Cooke, and hosts of others. Paradise Valley was torn apart for the construction of I-75, and while Black life in Detroit certainly went on, it's difficult to calculate the value of that loss. And yet, are this place and these people really ghosts to us? A 25-minute composition in tribute to Paradise Valley will premiere this month as part of a virtual event by the Acropolis Reed Quintet. It was composed by Jeff Scott of Oberlin College faculty and the Imani Winds. Matt Landry joins us now. He's the executive director and saxophonist for the Acropolis Reed Quintet. Matt, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is someone who'll be taking part in the premiere events as, I guess, sort of dramaturg. Marcia Music is a writer and documentarian of Detroit's stories. She grew up in Highland Park in a very musical family, and I think we can say is a city treasure. Marcia Music, it is a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Marcia, you would have been pretty small when Paradise Valley was still a working community, and I'm guessing as a kid you weren't in the clubs very much?
No, it was before my time, although Paradise Valley, there were remnants of it that actually still existed into my adulthood.
Your dad was the eminent record producer Joe Von Battle, and he worked with this whole constellation of gospel and blues artists and also ran a record store right on Hastings. Do you think people understand the economic vitality of those times?
I think that fortunately what is happening, there is a generation of storytellers, writers, community griots who are keeping these memories forefront and returning these areas into the public domain and the public consciousness. And those people who grew up in those areas, who are now elders, you know, they're still around. You know, they remember those areas very well. So they're not long ago ghosts for them. That was their growing up.
What would we have seen and heard walking around the neighborhood?
Well, it depends on the neighborhood. These were actually three very distinct neighborhoods. Black Bottom, which is now Lafayette Park, Hastings Street, which was a thoroughfare running from the river to East Grand Boulevard and Avenue, and then Paradise Valley, which was further north, which is now basically the sports stadiums.
Let's take Hastings, where your father had his business. What can you, could you sort of evoke the scene for us?
Well, it was a street of great density. Detroit was very dense in those days, and those communities were very dense, even commercial districts. There was a lot of hustle and bustle. It was teeming with people, replete with activity. There were musicians that would actually just sing on the street sometimes. Sometimes there were people that would get on crates and stand up and preach and talk. Even Malcolm X was one of those people. And people would sing, and John Lee Hooker would walk up and down the street with his guitar.
That man don't love you. He told me so.
There's a very famous, iconic photograph of John Lee Hooker and his guitar standing right in front of my dad's record shop that was taken by a French photographer who was writing a book about Detroit in 1959. So it was a very active and busy place.
for folks who want to see it, that photo is part of a very beautiful remembrance that Marcia wrote of her dad. That's available with a quick search. We'll post it up in the show's Twitter feed as well. Matt, I wanted to ask you what was helpful in grounding yourself in the things you needed to know for Acropolis to take on this project.
Wow, that's a great question. And a great question because not only are we, you know, an all-white classical music ensemble, but none of us are actually natives to Detroit. Really, what grounds us is the art that we create. So we want to make sure that the art is created authentically from a voice that's authentic to the struggle of these Black communities that have been raised all over the country. So in this case, we started in 2018 with Jeff Scott, a composer not from Detroit and who had never really been to Detroit, who was from New York. And so he could empathize with much of what was happening. He's a Black composer and plays in what was at the time of its founding, the Imani Winds, the first wind quintet of entirely people of color in the United States, really of any prominence. So we brought Jeff out. He learned about this history. We learned about this history. Jeff created this piece of music, Homage to Paradise Valley. Then we got in touch with Marcia. And then really, as everybody can hear already from talking, from hearing her just a little bit, you get a more visceral and really grounded. I mean, you really get grounded in terms of what it was like and what we lost, what we all lost in these neighborhoods being destroyed. And so now we've actually played the piece 30 or so times live before even getting in touch with Marcia. Now we're doing this soiree to have Marcia on, and she created this new poetry that goes along with the piece. And now we're going to do more live performances whenever live performances happen again. And it's got a new sense of grounding and a whole new experience now for us when we perform it.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about one of the movements in the piece that Jeff Scott created. It's called Club Paradise Jump. Could you describe, Matt, what that particular movement is trying to capture?
Yeah, so Club Paradise Jump, or I think we actually just renamed it to Paradise Theater Jump. It evokes the Paradise Theater, which is now Orchestra Hall, where the Detroit Symphony Orchestra plays. But at that time, it was essentially a jazz concert hall, jazz, blues, and it brought in all the great Black artists from all around the country. And a jump was a really up-tempo dance that was done in the 40s and 50s. And so that final movement, the Paradise Theater Jump, is just a celebration of all the music that took place at that time. As it is also jazz inspired, it is also very technical and classical, which is what Jeff Scott, the composer, what his real speciality is. So it's his way of connecting us back to this older jazz music that was so popular and prominent. I mean, it's just so hard to put ourselves in a position of understanding how popular this music was and how much it just drove everyone to get up to dance. It was just everyday life. And so it just, the final movement, the Paradise Theater Jump, just tries to capture that a little bit in just a real exciting piece of music.
Before I ask this next question, Marcia, have you heard that movement?
Yes, it is thrilling. The entire work is thrilling.
Is it even possible to capture Paradise Valley in music? That kind of sounds like a tall order.
I think that it is a classical work that evokes those places in a different idiom than we're accustomed to hearing. It is not a jazz work. It is not a bluesy work. It is a classical work. And I think that its importance is that in the classical world, ensuring that this history, this important cultural bedrock, be acknowledged and celebrated in the classical idiom.
This movement has a real roll and bounce to it. Matt, can you talk about catching the energy of those musical forms without parroting them, per se?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's interesting because I'm, as the saxophonist of the group, I'm probably the member that has, well, I'm definitely the member that has the most relationship and experience with jazz music. I said I grew up in New Orleans, and it's very much a part of me. I do improvise. I do play some other idioms. So what we try to do when we play music that is inspired by other forms of music that are not classical is we try to just push ourselves a little bit to learn about them and to make sure that we are playing in our own style, but in a way that's authentic to the energy that we need to have. And so in this case, it's actually in the Paradise Theater Jump, a lot of it comes down to the tempo. It comes down to the momentum and the way that Jeff writes the bass line. Boom, beam, boom, beam, boom, beam. It's a question of it's kind of offset. It's not really straightforward. So how do you keep that moving? And how do you get all the other notes to interlock? So to be honest, once you've done that in this fourth movement, the Paradise Theater Jump, it kind of plays itself. It's a lot of fun.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Matt Landry. He's the executive director and saxophonist for the Acropolis Reed Quintet. And also with us is Detroit writer Marcia Music. Matt, you mentioned just a minute ago that Acropolis is an all-white Reed Quintet. Why was it important for you guys to interpret a work on Paradise Alley? I mean, what did you feel like you could bring to this story?
Well, this all started in our approaching Jeff in order to create a substantial classical work of music for us. And then after talking to him about what he might compose, he kind of chose to lean into this history of Detroit that as an outsider, he didn't know. And so Marcia had stated that it's very important that classical music begin to open itself up to other ways of thinking about music. Frankly, classical music, I think in order to survive and to continue to thrive, needs to continue to be open-minded about what it is. There are even really great and substantial questions in the classical music community being asked right now about the value and the elitism of the written note as opposed to the improvised note or the just heard and spoken word in song. And classical musicians tend to think that their music is the best because it takes so much time to write and it has so much complex theory behind it. And we just want, as a group, to bring our best selves as classical artists, classically trained in conservatory, so to speak, to something that stretches our own abilities, that brings in new sounds and new perspectives. So as far as Paradise Valley goes, you know, we want the composer who writes a piece for us to find something that they can express themselves through. And this was something that Jeff really, when he found out about it in visiting Detroit with us, he just really latched onto and he just knew this was going to be what he wanted to express. So from there, our job is just laid out for us. It is now plain and clear. We now have to have that same vision as a group.
Marcia, can you tell us, without tipping your hand too much for the performance, some of what's been on your mind as you prepare the spoken word aspect of the program?
I had realized some months ago that I had never actually written a piece on Black Bottom per se, or on Paradise Valley per se, or on Hastings Street per se. I had done writing on my father's record shop and the community in which it existed, but I got this message from Matt asking me would I participate in this project, and I thought, well, this is a good opportunity for me to do this work that I've been wanting to do. I love doing epic poems, long rhyming chronicles on aspects of life in Detroit. And then when I heard that the composer was a Black composer that was wanting to explore this community of Black Bottom, Hastings, and Paradise Valley, well, that really gave me an opportunity to try to work my poem into those three sections and to just try to capture in a form that I think is appealing in order to give people a sense of the history of that time and the dynamism of life and of Black life and the enterprise, the musicality of life during those years. And so that's what I think I brought to this.
The places that we're talking about are places that Black Detroiters didn't have a lot of choice about inhabiting. I mean, when Ford started hiring, the real estate world was not selling to Black families. And yet, people made so much and created so much and built so much and lived so much in places like Paradise Valley. Marcia, would you say that that duality was very much in the minds of the people who worked and played there?
Yes, that's a good observation, because that tension of the dichotomy of being, on the one hand, basically compelled to live in very restricted places, but at the same time developing such human endeavors because of it, this pressure cooker of the concentration of people, of various classes of people living together. You know, because of the segregation of that time, Blacks didn't have the ability to live in places other than very few communities in Detroit. It was quite a synergy of classes and of the dynamic culture that developed during that period of time because of this closeness in these communities that really helped to really explode commercial endeavors, businesses, because we could not shop in the businesses like Hudson's. We were not allowed in those places. So this community created its own kind of downtown on Hastings Street. And it was a place where Black people exercised their creativity and their entrepreneurship. And so really, you could say the roots of Motown are even in Black Bottom, with Berry Gordy's father being a business owner in various areas in and around Black Bottom, various businesses. So the segregation in which the community was compelled to function also at the same time compelled people to exercise this great creativity.
Detroit writer Marcia Music. We've also been speaking with Matt Landry, the executive director and saxophonist for the Acropolis Reed Quintet. The new work that Acropolis commissioned, celebrating Detroit's Paradise Valley, will premiere in virtual soirees through July 19th. And Marcia's part of the event as well, with spoken word and stories from Paradise Valley's past. Information's on their website. Marcia, Matt, thank you both very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Support for arts and culture coverage on Stateside comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.